This Week in Loikomania, we talk about SIF number 1, Guardians of the Galaxy 25, X-Men Second Coming, because we never talk about that book enough here, and of course, Lost, and we ramble on about comics and journalism. Episode 4. This is Pat Loika, and once again this week I have a guest. That is Mr. Corwin Gibson. Hello, Corwin.
Please, please, call me Steve.
How you doing, Steve?
Hey, I'm glad to be back. It's always fun to be here. I always like talking about stuff, even if sometimes maybe I'm tired. But I'm not tired tonight, thankfully. Tonight, I'm full of energy.
I can tell, because you're talking quite a bit.
Like that guy that used to do all the Micro Machines commercials. Micro Machines.
And he was
Blur. He was Blur in the Transformers movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Muschietta, I believe.
Yes. Yes. That's sort of what I feel like right now. A little bit like that.
Well, hopefully we have enough to talk about to slow you down a bit.
Well, oh no. Okay.
So what's new in the world of Corwin Gibson?
Doing my webcomic still. We're still working on Galaxy of the Damned. We, as in myself, working on some technical issues, some new things, trying to get ready for the big jump to a new website. So that's going to be happening pretty soon. You'll be hearing more about it from me sooner rather than later. I'm also getting ready for Free Comic Book Day, which is coming right up. It's right around the corner.
This coming weekend, actually.
Yep, this Saturday. So I'm going to be at Atomic Comics in Mesa for this, and I'm going to be doing free sketches along with a slew of other awesome people. So that'll be cool, too. So I'm looking forward to that, a whole afternoon of awesome comic booking.
That's good to hear.
Store, like shop appearances and conventions, those are like, I think those are probably my favorite part of making comics, actually.
You know why, right? Because you get to go outside and hang and be with real people. And not,
yeah, you get to socialize while doing this.
Yeah, you're not locked in a studio where there's no one to talk to, except, well, of course, thanks to Skype, though, that's kind of changed a bit.
Yeah.
But still, you know, nothing beats actual interaction when you're outside with the world.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Plus, I meet girls. That's always a plus. Mm-hmm. So.
So, once again, you're going to be at the Atomic Comic Store in Mesa, Arizona.
Yeah, Mesa. That's the Mesa Superstore for Atomic Comics. That's like their linchpin of the company.
Okay. And you guys can check that out. Go to atomiccomics.com. If you're in the area, stop by and say hi to Corwin and tell them you heard him here. That's why you're there.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So, speaking of comics and comic stores, I'll talk about some stuff from last week real quick. There are three books that stood out for me. First one is Guardians of the Galaxy number 25. Now, did you read this book?
Guardians of the Galaxy? Yes, I did. Yes.
And
yes! Oh, God, yes.
Was that not badass?
Oh, it was definitely badass. I thoroughly enjoyed everything about that book. Of course, I always feel that way about Guardians of the Galaxy. You know?
It's continuously one of the best books Marvel publishes. Probably one of the most entertaining books they put out.
Yeah.
And it never fails every month. And I'm kind of sad that they're going on hiatus because of the upcoming cosmic event, which we'll talk about in a second. But, you know, it looks like the book's been doing strong well enough that I'm pretty sure it's going to come back after this event comes to an end. And the event is the Thanos Imperative. The issue 25... Spoilers, by the way. Issue 25 is, well, the aftermath of last issue, wherein we find out Thanos has been resurrected, and he was not happy about it.
Yes. That's kind of an understatement.
Yeah, we have naked Thanos running roughshod and killing people. And I think he decimated the entire population of Sacrosanct, didn't he, that planet?
Possibly. It certainly seemed like it.
They mentioned that a couple of times that he damn near exterminated all those people, and which is a hell of a way for him to make his return. And then when they finally beat him, it took an actual cosmic cube to just knock him out. And I think the most important thing from the issue is, you know, what he said and why he's pissed off. And when he said, you know, for forcing him back to life, the universe yes. will die. And the last time we saw Thanos was in Annihilation, and he died, and he was really happy because he was with the one he wanted to be with. He was with Death. And of course, they took that away from him. So now there's a new wrinkle to this character, and now he has an entirely different reason to be angry and to, you know, to cause all this trouble once again. And I think there are a couple clues also about the character regarding some new, you know, some new developments about his character. The fact that he appears to be invulnerable now.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so now it's going to be difficult to kill him, even more difficult than.
Yeah,
than
he wasn't exactly easy to kill to begin with. I mean, that's why Drax existed in the first place, because mm-hmm. he needed somebody that would be able to kill him.
Yeah, but now it's nowhere near. It's going to be even a bit tougher because it looks like he's invulnerable,
or nigh invulnerable. You know, he could be pretty much.
It would take something along the levels of a cosmic cube or the Infinity Gems to beat him, just based off of what we've read so far. I mean, the actual event that features Thanos, the Thanos Imperative, has not actually, you know, it hasn't come out yet, and we don't know the full extent of what that particular book's about. But you can only assume that it's just his plan to kill everything because he's pissed off.
Yeah.
And of course, that issue was by Dan Abnett and Addie Lanning, and illustrated by Brad Walker, who turned in a hell of a performance this week. I know Walker had done some stuff for DC before. He did some Superman stuff, he did some Secret Six stuff, and he did a few other issues of Guardians before this, but this is probably some of his strongest work.
Yeah, I found it to be pretty entertaining and pretty well-done work. I was pretty impressed. That's one of those things that's bugged me about Guardians of the Galaxy is the inconsistency in the art. And it's just like, it's because it just seems like it's like, oh, we got one guy doing it. Oh, we're going to have somebody else doing it for this issue. Oh, we're going to have somebody else doing it for this issue. And it was always just like, guys, just pick a dude. Pick a dude to draw it and we'll be happy. You know, just one. Mm-hmm. Just one dude. No,
it looks like Walker is going to be drawing the actual Thanos Imperative, though. So this should be good.
Yeah,
I don't mind Wes Craig either. He was the other guy that they kind of had revolving with Walker the last few years.
I like Wes Craig as well.
Yeah, Wes Craig is great. He's channeling a little bit of Mignola in his stuff lately.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to stand up here. I'm going to say Wes Craig is pretty awesome. I've really liked all of his work, and I know that there are plenty of people out there that have not been liking it. They've been hating on it. They've been hating. They've been drinking the haterade about the Wes Craig art, and I gotta say, STFU.
Yeah, I agree with you. it's really, I don't know. He's such great storyteller. You know, it's like there's a lot of motion, there's a lot of fluidity from panel to panel in his work.
Yeah,
and you know, he has a very unmistakable style. You see that style, you know it's him. It's not generic. You know.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of having a style, of having something that's unique, having a unique style to your work.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the artists I'm always finding myself drawn to these days. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care so much about the guys coming out of, you know, some of the other publishers or some of the guys that are out there that are just sort of just doing that, what is it, like the popular kind of stuff that's like, you know, sort of the cross-hatching, sort of Jim Lee-esque or Sylvester-esque kind of stuff. I mean, there's a place for that. There's definitely a place for that.
There's a place for everything, but it's kind of nice that
Those guys are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, it's opened up a bit for artists. You know, there's a lot more different styles coming out lately. I mean, like 15, 16 years ago, in the early 90s, they probably wouldn't have guys like Wes Craig working on big books or...
Right.
You know, it's nice that there's a little bit of a room for any kind of art style in any book. I mean, we used to have... I mean, I'm not gonna have, I don't have anything against the guy, but, you know, we used to get, Ron Lim with always really cosmic stuff back then.
Yeah.
And I liked his stuff back then, but, you know, these days, though, you know, it's nice that there's actually other people who...
It was always Ron Lim and Jim Starlin. You know, you're like, okay, yeah, I've kind of seen those guys drawing to death now. It's kind of let's move on to some other good artists that we can get on here.
Yeah.
Anyway. There was somebody. I'm trying to remember some of the others. I'd like to see Andrea DeVito do some more of the cosmic stuff, because I like it when he does the cosmic stuff.
Yeah, he's been doing. I think he's been doing Nova in the past.
Yeah,
few months.
I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him get in on to one of the big events again. Of course, we haven't had one of those big events in a little while here. So, one of those big space ones. Besides,
we had War of Kings.
The War of Kings. I mean, well, of course, War of Kings was what? That was like. Was that?
About 6 months ago.
6 months ago, okay.
Ended about 6 months ago or something.
Yeah.
I'm sort of
live in a bubble, you know. So
you're not really a big monthly comic guy.
Yeah, well, I can't afford to be these days.
That's perfectly understandable.
In fact, it's like for me, War of Kings is happening right now because now is the time when I'm finding it in the quarter bin. So.
Mm-hmm. speaking of. Not being able to do something monthly. Here's a book that's not monthly, and it's a book that's it's a one shot actually. It's Sith number one. It's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick and illustrated by Ryan Stegman, who's becoming one of my favorite artists right now. I don't know if you've ever seen his stuff or follow him on Twitter, but he posts.
I don't know who the hell he is. I'm going to be honest.
Look him up on Twitter. He does fantastic stuff. He posts sketches as he were when he's warming up for the day before he works on pages or whatever. He posts them. He does some beautiful stuff, and he drew this issue. It's basically. I mean, are you aware of any of the stuff that happened in Thor in the last couple of years?
Yeah, for the most part.
Are you aware of the whole situation behind female Loki?
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, all this time, you know, Loki has been using Sif's body.
Mm-hmm.
And here we pick up this story with Sif in the aftermath of all that, she's trying to basically regain herself. I mean, she's trying to basically, you know, it's basically how Sif got her groove back.
Yeah.
And it starts out with her feeling really terrible, feeling really crappy about herself, and then an old friend shows up and invites her, and looking for Thor actually, and she decides to inject herself into that situation, and basically in an attempt to make herself feel better about herself. And it's really fun stuff. Of course, that friend that shows up is actually Battery Bill. And she goes out with them to space and helps them, goes on a little quest to help them out. And it's a fun little adventure book. Of course, lots of character development for Sif herself. I was really impressed by it. And I'm really looking forward to the next... because this is part of the Women of Marvel initiative this year. And the next one is going to be Rescue, which is about, you know, Pepper Potts. So I'm looking forward to that.
The stupidest fucking name for a superhero.
Well, she's not even a superhero. The Rescue is the name of the armor. So
It's a stupid fucking name. Here's my other new armor, First Aid. Yeah, that's great, you know.
Well, no. She's not a superhero. The armor is a one-time thing. So,
well, then we'd be getting a one-shot about it. If it was a one-time thing, isn't it over?
This takes place during that time when she had it. It takes place before Siege, before all that stuff.
Ah.
You just got schooled, son.
No, not really. I didn't really get schooled. It's still retarded.
Whatever. I don't know what you think. You're a problem. You're a loose cannon.
I'm a loose cannon. There's no time.
Speaking of no time, a perfect way to segue into X-Men Second Coming.
Oh God!
Last week's issue was X-Men Legacy, written by Mike Carey, illustrated by Greg Land.
I was blindsided. I was fooled. They tricked me into getting me to read a Greg Land comic, and I'm angry now.
He wasn't that bad. Not in this issue anyway. He's gotten better. We try to keep it. Remember, Corbin, we try to keep it positive here in this show.
Well, then I don't know why you got me around, man.
Yeah, you're here because you're funny.
There was one good page in that entire comic of his art.
Is it Warlock?
One good page. It's Warlock. It's the Warlock because he couldn't copy from anything except maybe another drawing of Warlock. And I don't have the time to go through and look through old new comics to see if he just copied an old Warlock page. So maybe he did, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he was actually being creative for once in his damn career.
Well, he's been creative before. Come on. We're not here to insult the art, though. Come on. I want to talk about.
We can move on.
Yeah, move on past that. I mean, as far as the story's concerned, I hate to say it, but it felt like it was running in place. Although there were a lot of players being shifted around, lots of changes as far as who's with who.
I think I pissed off that dog. That's a Greg Landlover back there.
No, we kind of have this. This is like something you have to deal with in a live recording. We have like a really loud dog next door. And then the window of this.
Roof, 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 roof. Yes. Hey, shut up about Greg Land. I love him.
Shut up. Okay. No, seriously, no. X-Men, this week's chapter is. It felt kind of like a. It felt like it was in a holding pattern, you know?
Yeah, it was like a. There were important things that had to be done, and it, like, I know this like from my own experience of having to like do pages that are just sort of they sort of feel like filler pages, and in a way they kind of are, except they have to exist in order to get certain things done. You know, it's like maybe no giant events occur in this moment here, but I have to progress the story somehow, so. Yeah.
I mean, as far as the story beats go, I mean, it finally got the X-Men and Cable and Hope together. And they came up with an alternate. They figured out, and they also figured out how, you know, Bastion and his people were able to locate Cable at every turn. So that, it served the story well in that regard. And we learned a little bit more as to, we learned how they were being detected all the time, and we learned also. We also got them. We got Hope in the right people's hands, basically. But now it's. And they killed a couple of characters.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The whole concept of people dying in almost every issue is kind of gotten to that point where I'm treating some of the deaths here like they were nothing.
Yeah, you kind of forget they happen.
Yeah, they killed Stephen Lang. No, not Stephen Lang, but Cameron Hodge.
Oh yeah, they did kill Cameron.
They finally got rid of him. I couldn't stand that guy anyway, so finally. And then they killed off another mutant teleporter.
Ariel. I don't know. I don't know who the hell that is.
I honestly don't recall who she is either, or where she's from.
She had some like pink hair.
Yeah.
And like that describes how many teleporters?
<She has pink hair.
laughs> like if you got pink hair and you're a mutant, you must be a teleporter.
It looks that way. Yeah, it's unfortunate they lost another one, so it brings them down to like what, the low 190s now after Necrotia.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. And then there's, I think that's it as far as deaths go. And then, of course, we know that Karma is really badly injured.
Yeah.
Which is important.
Karma's badly injured. And we had to get this out of the way. We had to go and set Wolverine on fire and burn him a bit, you know. And you have to do that every time. Every time you got a big event, you got to do something in which he has to be all burnt up and slowly healing again and being tough, you know, because he's Wolverine. So we got that. We got that going on.
Yeah, and I think that covers everything as far as this issue goes. Again, yeah. it's still very entertaining. Still a lot of fun.
Well, we also got some good use out of Doug Ramsey, which, you know.
Oh yeah.
That's always kind of a pain in the butt to have to figure out is what to do with that guy.
Because self will not mourn you. that was actually pretty cool. I love that Warlock moment. I never cared for that character at all. I thought he was kind of a wimp, but you know, hey, you know what? That's cool. And you know what? Doug actually got himself made himself useful.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of I was saying this thing is kind of in a holding pattern. Speaking of a holding pattern, this week's episode of Lost.
You mean last week's episode of Lost?
This past week's episode of Lost, the last new episode of Lost, yeah. A couple weeks. It felt like it was kind of in the holding pattern like itself. I mean, aside from a few players shifting allegiances, again shifting like they always do in this show, it looks like nothing really major happened, no major revelations came about. And then, of course, there's still the mystery of whatever happened, what happened to Desmond.
Yeah, you've got that going. There is the question of what happened to Desmond, but it seems fairly obvious that he is alive, which means that Saeed didn't actually do what Fake Locke told him to do, which means that Fake Locke doesn't necessarily have the complete hold over these people that we all thought he did.
I could say he didn't have a complete hold on all of them.
We knew that. I mean, what I mean is you were given this impression that Saeed and Claire, they were turned, and there was no turning back for them. And now we see that maybe there's a chance that there could be turning back, at least for Saeed. We don't know. And then, of course, we're left with the big ending of Jack ending up on Locke's side out of horrible stupid luck.
Oh yeah. You're with me now.
Yeah.
You're with me now.
Which is scary. Oh, and then of course let's not we don't wanna minimize the importance of Jin and Sun being together again.
Yes,
that was a major point for those characters. I mean, that was their driving force until this episode was defining each other.
And they haven't seen each other since what, season 4, right? The end of season 4.
That
was actually a great moment. That was probably like the biggest moment of that episode.
I cried a little. I did. I cried a little. But I always cry because of those two. They just make me cry.
They're awesome. And
they are awesome. Awesome. And of course, you know, it's going back, I do have to touch on my little theory there about this is that something that for some reason, I don't know, I just sort of like had a brain fart about it, was the fact that Sun and Claire are still pregnant. Like they are pregnant in the alternate timeline. So yeah. I'm not sure. Like, I'm like, well, now I don't know how this would work if we were to try to go with my kind of theory. I mean, you could still find a way to make it work, I guess. I mean, I still want to say that there's got to be something going on there besides just, you know, it being an alternate universe going on right now. There's got to be something going on there besides that because it just seems too straightforward for Lost.
I'm sure there's going to be some kind of reveal as we get towards the end.
And really, and also it's entirely possible, entirely likely that that hairstyles, like the fact that, you know, Jack has the same length of hair that he does right now in our normal timeline as he does in the alternate timeline, that could just be a red herring because they love their red herrings as well. So, but I still think about it. I think about it way too much, probably, thinking about time.
You're thinking about hair too much.
I'm thinking about hair too much, but I mean, I'm thinking about, like, I think beyond the hair. The hair was just the catalyst for my thinking about it. But I think about the timeline way too much. So, and I'm sure I'll have some more theories.
I'm pretty sure you're right on the money on a few things. I would like to believe that you have something right because you seem to have done more research on this thing than I have.
Ah.
So I want you to be right.
Well, like I want to say, there's got to be more to it. Like, we still have the fact that it was important that Desmond was Daniel Faraday's constant, if you remember, all the way back, right? And it's important. And I think it still has to be important because we've seen Daniel Faraday again and we saw the two of them interacting. And like, there's got to be something else that's going to be coming into play with that because we didn't really – I don't think we really got any sort of satisfying connection to that moment, if you understand,
hasn't been fully resolved yet.
It hasn't been resolved yet because, you know, I mean, it's got to be important that that Desmond is his constant. Like, it's gonna have to come into play at some point, I would think. So I don't know. I still want to know what the hell is gonna happen with Locke in the alternate timeline.
Man, he got fucked up.
He got fucked up. He definitely got fucked up.
I still want to see. Yeah, I wanted to see what is going to happen next with that guy, but it looks like he's going to go to the hospital where everyone seems to be going.
Well, it seems to me it's a pretty good situation right there for multiple parties involved to suddenly remember where they should be.
That is true.
You know, So now you got to ask, did Desmond know that Locke would be taken to that specific hospital and be worked on by that specific doctor, Dr. Jack Shepard?
Yeah, either that or he just was like, hey, this is a fucking that or just threw me a little well.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think Desmond knows more than we give him credit for.
Well, yeah, that much I'm sure of. But me, I was just joking.
Oh yeah, or at least in my opinion, it seems that, you know, that was his whole reason for hitting him with the car was because, you know, there were two ways that you could remember where you were. Mm-hmm. The way that Desmond and Charlie remembered was near death experiences. And the way that Hugo remembered and Libby Libby just sort of remembered from seeing it, but Hugo remembered from being reminded of that love. And so, like, the love and the experience sort of go hand in hand, but the catalyst could be love itself, or the catalyst could be the near-death experience. And so, easy way to get Locke to remember, hit him with a fucking car. And then you've got, of course, you got Sun and Jin already love each other, and they're still in some sort of a relationship. They're going to have a baby, so that can't be the catalyst.
So there has to be something that happens to them, something traumatic, somewhat traumatic.
Yeah, well, yeah, and so she's got that bullet in her stomach, chest. So
that's good work. Yeah, yeah. Very good, Corwin. You do your homework.
I am a lost scholar, if you will. When I'm sitting here drawing, sometimes I think about that stuff. So
clearly,
I'm a thinker.
You're a thinker.
Ah, whoa.
Speaking of thinkers, we will pause for a moment to take a break, and we will be back, and we will be talking about something that kind of bugs us about. About online journalism. And welcome back to Loikomania. We kind of alluded to something earlier, and I wanted to talk a little bit about online journalism or critics or whatever you want to call them, reviewers.
First, before we go any further, I want to put up a little disclaimer, at least on my part, that any beef that I have with this, with journalism or criticism or anything like that online has very little to do with it being negative or bashing things, because I do that all the fucking time. And I don't want to be a hypocrite here and say this is why I hate it. So,
well, the thing is, you're not claiming to be a critic.
But that's the other thing I was going to say.
Nobody pays you for your opinion.
I am not a critic. I don't write reviews. And a main reason why I don't write reviews is because, as intelligent as I might be, and as
that's a lie.
No, seriously, honestly, I don't really have it in me to spend a lot of time going into good detail of picking apart something intelligently and coming up with reasons why I like it or don't like it. Generally, if I like something, I just like it. And if I don't like something, sometimes I can't figure out why. I just don't like it, you know? I try to figure out why, but that's for me to figure out on my own or with friends, and I don't want to, you know, create a soapbox for myself and put it out there the way that other people have. If you're good at it, go continue now.
Wow.
Yes.
You forget whose show this is.
I have taken over. Oh, Pat Loika, you...
This is unacceptable, Foreman. No, seriously, though, on the topic at hand, a few days ago, I was perusing a somewhat large comics news site, right? I'm not going to name names.
Well, there's a few of them, and they all sort of seem the same to me now.
Yeah, you can say that to a certain degree. But this site, there's a column here. And I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to name because I don't want to give it any further publicity, and I don't really want to turn this into some kind of beef. I wanted to give my opinion on something. So this reviewer basically reads a bunch of comics, and I don't think he even buys them. He just reads them off the rack at a store or something, and he gives his reviews. His reviews, and he would have reviews that are just pretty. He has really, really misinformed and very, I would say, insulting reviews, because he doesn't take into account the actual work that goes into the book itself, into the comics that he's reviewing. You know, he doesn't talk about specifics as far as the art's concerned. He doesn't talk about, you know, writing technique. He doesn't know anything, and it's got me thinking about how do these so-called comics news sites go about hiring or, you know, inducting reviewers into their staff. Because if, the way I see it, if you're a reviewer, you have to at least know the basics, or you can at least, you should at least be at least trained or studied in journalism a little bit.
Have some idea of what it is you are doing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, even sometimes have a grasp of the English language.
Oh, yeah. And it drives me crazy when I see people using meh in the review. That's a word that does not belong in the review, because that is somewhat insulting.
Yeah.
Especially for, you know, like I said, the creators, they pour a lot of their heart and soul into their work. And regardless of whether or not you like it, you know, it doesn't matter, because art is subjective, and comics is an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And you're dealing with something with a subjective art form. You could at least, you know, give them the respect they deserve, and actually elaborate on what makes you feel a certain way about any comic, whether you like it or you don't like it.
Yeah,
you know, they at least have earned that by getting that book done and having it in the shelf for you to buy or even read off of the racks.
Right. Oh, and I think I want to say, like, I could say as an artist, like, something that bugs me personally is when somebody doesn't have much of an opinion at all about something I do, because I'd rather have people absolutely hate my work than not have an opinion on it or not want to think about it. That's more painful to me if they're just like, if they only even pay attention to it. You know, it's that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I guess that makes me an attention whore. I think that's part of it too. Is you know, like, if you put all this work into it and somebody is going to at least entertain you with some kind of criticism or something, then give them actual criticism, right? It'll just do the work, you know?
Yeah, and I know, like, some of these reviews, some of the online critics or whatever were so bad. I know some people actually, you know, got really offended by some of the criticism, or some of them just plain stopped doing comics just because of that, because they're afraid to be put under that kind of microscope. You're not going to be encouraged to try doing anything new if you know the people who are going to look at your work are going to treat it like the way some of these reviewers treat other people's work. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, and I find it strange that, you know, that half the time, or maybe even all of them, for all I know, were just being hired because they happen to be good enough fanboys or something.
Yeah, I actually have no idea how it is any of these websites hire anybody. I don't know how that works. I don't know what goes into it. I don't know what the interview process is like, mm-hmm. the vetting process. I don't even know if there is one. I mean, there's got to be. I mean, obviously, there's got to be, since I'm not working for one of them, you know, mm-hmm. and you're not working for one of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes sense to me that there'd have to be some process by which these guys are getting these jobs. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know how strict it could really be. I don't know. I can't imagine it being that strict, because of looking at the kind of people that are working in this from top to bottom, it's a complete joke. There is no such thing as journalism in comics.
No. There are some good ones.
No, there is no journalism in comics. There is not. I say that.
You have people like Heidi McDonald, Tom Spurgeon, or Vanita Rogers. They actually know what they're doing. They're engaging journalism.
Three people isn't enough.
But still, it exists, right? They are there.
I'm saying this because I want to motivate somebody else to get into it, man.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying there are good ones out there. We have to point out that there are examples of good ones, and they should look at these people and look at what they do.
Yeah.
You don't just get in it because you think you know what you're better.
Yeah.
You can see some people who've done stuff out, you know, and try to base yourself on what these people are doing, because at least these people carry themselves very professionally. They don't get involved in retarded online arguments, you know, in bullshit that's started by certain gossip columns.
There's also it's just like you look at the big sites, the big comics news sites. Mm-hmm. And they're nothing but just a placeholder for press releases and announcements from companies. You know, you get these interviews, these quote unquote interviews, which are pretty much just a place for, you know, the head of a company or whoever's writing the book to just, you know, push their product. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing as what they do on talk shows these days when they have a somebody out to promote their book or somebody out to promote their comic. Unless, like, you're watching The Daily Show, in which, you know, if somebody is promoting a book, sometimes Jon Stewart actually gets them into an intelligent conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see more of that going on in the comics journalism, right?
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It's across the board.
Here's the thing about interviews. Half the time, those interviews, I mean, I'm not saying all of them are done that way, but a lot of interviews are done with cut and paste email, you know, exchange. It's a rarity. I mean, you have something different when you have, you know, we have podcasts, and there's some good podcasts out there with some really good interviewers. Like, you have guys like John Suntress and Chris Neisman who do really good, you know, interviews.
They do good interviews. Those are good interviews.
And even if the purpose of the interview is to promote a product, they do get into tangents and talk about other things about the industry, about putting out the kind of work that they put out.
That's something to
be commended. But, you know, there's not enough of that going on. You know, I mean, I can see, yeah. I see a lot of interviews that are posted in these big sites where it looks like, you know, literally it's a question that someone just types in an answer and there's no follow-up or anything like that to any answer to any question. You can tell it was done by email and it was just like, yeah, I just want to get this email done. You know, it's kind of sad, considering there's a lot to be talked about as far as the industry is concerned, as far as the creative process is concerned.
Yeah.
So that I find that kind of bothersome. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
it's got to be a difficult task to undertake when you think about the fact that in order for these websites to survive, they probably have to play it this way, play it the way that they do.
Well, yeah, it's true.
You know, like, because, I mean, that's just the way it is. Like, it's controlled. It's, if you don't give Marvel what it wants, or anybody, not just Marvel, I don't want to just pick one out and say these guys are bad or something, but if you don't do what publisher A wants of you, then they're not going to give you the exclusives that you might want that'll give you hits. So, you know, then you got that problem. And of course, this is a problem that exists not just in comics. This is in journalism all over the place.
Especially in so-called anything media related, you know, like TV or movies, you know, like all these websites fight for whatever.
I mean, thankfully, we don't have any sort of programs that are just pundits that they're supposed to be there as authorities or something and just talking their heads.
We thankfully don't have that.
Well, instead, we've got.
Hopefully, they're all relegated to their own blogs or their own.
Exactly. Nobody's giving them a mouthpiece, really.
Yeah. You know, they're giving themselves mouthpieces.
I probably spoke too soon. I'm sure somebody's going to be changing that any time now.
Well, yeah.
Just connected the dots for them.
I mean, come on, the existence of the internet has basically allowed people. It gave people the balls to say or do whatever they want. You know, they had
anonymity is a strong thing, my friend. It's true. It makes you feel powerful.
Yeah, that's the thing. The anonymity and the fact that really you hide behind the fact that you're making an opinion and that everyone's entitled to an opinion, and yet you act like, you know, your opinion is worth more than other people's.
I don't know anybody that's like that.
But the so-called journalism and then critics. I'm trying to figure out how that goes, how all these people get picked to do what they do, and if anyone's listening is actually involved working for any of the big sites or any site at all that requires.
Yeah, dude. Yes, please tell us.
Yeah, I honestly would like to know.
I would love to know more about it.
Yeah, how do you become a comics reviewer?
Yeah.
How do you get to be? How do they decide that you're an authority? In this craft that you're qualified to judge these books by other people. Who do things that you probably can't do.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, you're actually a good writer, then you can write. But, you know. Yeah. If you want to talk about this sort of thing, send me an email. Send it to theloika@gmail.com. That's spelled theloika@gmail.com. At any rate, Corwin, that was actually a very fun, a little bit heated discussion about the
You call that heated?
it could have gotten much worse if I didn't strong arm you into kind of calming down a bit.
I wasn't even that angry. Jeez.
I don't know. I can't tell, man.
You bring it. No. You want to get me pissed off? Just bring up immigration. Then I'll get angry.
That's one field that I will not get into here. We don't talk politics here. But once again, you are located at galaxyofthedamned.blogspot.com. But you said you will be moving, right?
Yeah, but I'm not gonna plug that yet. It's not time yet.
Okay, well,
time is right, but you will definitely be the first to know.
Fantastic, and people can find you on Twitter also, twitter.com/.
What is that? Mustache Corwin.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually open now too. I used to be protecting my tweets, and I just decided, fuck it.
Fantastic.
I'm not saying anything that ridiculous, so. I might be tweeting about my poop. You know, there is that, so tread carefully.
And as for me, you can find me in the usual spots, facebook.com/Pataloika. You can check out my blog at pataloika.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Pataloika. And once again, if you have comments, suggestions, ideas, questions, whatever floats your boat, really, send them to theloika@gmail.com. That's spelled theloika@gmail.com. And we'll be back next week with more new comics, more X-Men Second Coming talk, because we can't get enough of the Second Coming around here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, more Second Coming talk and more whatever. And feel free to leave us an iTunes review or something, will you? Because that would be greatly appreciated by myself and the folks that run this feed. And once again, this is Pat Loika, and until next week, y'all take it easy. You have been listening to Loika Mania. All views expressed in this podcast belong solely to Pat Loika and his guests, and do not reflect the views of Derek Coward and the Deliberate Noise Network. For feedback or questions, please send them to theloika@gmail.com, and that's spelled theloika@gmail.com. And this podcast is a trademark of Pat Loika, all rights reserved, 2010.